Welcome, everybody. So this is basically the Marcel and Jesse show. We are on tour. You can book us. We always give this talk to both in a row. So it will be the first 15 to 20 minutes about Ofono, then a couple of questions, and then after that we're going to have the Wayland presentation by Jesse. My name is Marcel Altman. I work for the Intel Open Source Technology Center, and the next 15 minutes, as I said, is about Ofono, which is a telephony stack that we at Intel have been working on for the last 3 years. And it's kind of funny, wise, it's actually almost 3 years today. So it's 3 years old, so happy anniversary. So we actually have cake as well. If somebody wants a piece, help yourself. We have T-shirts as well if somebody wants a T-shirt. And I don't give any questions and give the T-shirt a gift. Who wants one can get one. I think there are enough there, so help yourself to it. Let me give you a little bit of background about Ofono. As I said, it's 3 years old by now in the public as Ofono. Internally, it's approximately 3.5 years old since we had the first 6 months internally developed inside Intel and then released it to the public, and we're going forward doing the development from then forward in the public. The 1.0 release for Ofono, you heard Imad releasing Kahneman, announcing Kahneman 1.0 today at his keynote. The 1.0 release of Ofono was actually last year, October, at the Genevieve event in San Diego. So currently we already at 1.6 release. With this one, 3 years, I'd like to thank everybody that actually contributed to Ofono so far in the last 3 years, and you can count the list by yourself. I counted 117 people that actually wrote patches, fixed things, and did a lot of work inside Ofono to get this done. Especially thing goes to Dennis. He's still the top contributor in inside Ofono, but also Samuel and Daniel Wagner, especially from BMW, who actually have been a lot of doing work inside Ofono to actually make this as successful as this is. And every week there are new people coming and helping and sending patches and taking up pieces of the stack to work on this. So really, everybody, a big thank you for you guys since you made this all possible. So while taking out the list of contributors, I also took out the list of companies that actually ended up contributing to Ofono, which is a list of companies where these contributors actually work for. So we have Intel, obviously, where myself work for Intel and Dennis. We had ST Ericsson coming up, stepping SA. We like Ofono, actually going to put our more hardware support into the public for this one. We had companies like BMW, as I said before, taking this up and thinking about putting this into projects they have. Other companies like Profusion worked on this and helped us with it, Electrobit, and so on and so forth. The companies taking this one and putting into public transportation systems or taking this into cabs. So then you actually can have basically not really building a phone, but you're actually building something that is actually using phone functionality to communicate with other vehicles or with other people inside other vehicles. The initial start was actually pretty bumpy. I hope this is actually readable. I never checked this on the big screen. But this was the first email we actually got, and it was essentially the tenor of this one was, okay, why are you guys doing this again? There are other projects in the open source, and they're doing the same thing, and they have a better API, and they're going this one, and why are you not contributing this one? And it, as I said, Ofono is 3 years old right now. It is 6 months older than we have the anniversary today. Previously, we looked in these 6 months before we actually looked at other projects and said, okay, what other projects are out there? Can we actually contribute to one? Can we promote one to actually be a full telephony stack as we need this? And unfortunately, the answer was no. Either they were not written in the way we wanted it to be written, or the APIs were too complex and way too much in a different way we wanted to go, or they were not finished, or they were going in the completely wrong direction, and so on and so forth. So we looked at projects like Qtopia, Free Smartphone, and so on and so forth. They were all not what we wanted. We wanted something absolutely different. But initially, the critics were going on, okay, guys, why are you doing this again? 2 years later, the answer from one of these critics was that wrote the first email when it came out. It was like, I abandoned my part. Guys, just use Ofono. It works way better. So that's a way in the 3 years we actually moved other projects over. And for example, Free Smartphone, while not having actually used Ofono, but they used the SMS support from Ofono and actually made their project with that one also better. So what is Ophono actually about? So obviously, it's a telephony stack for Linux. But the more important part is actually completely about creating a completely different architecture that actually moves the telephony stack from what everybody else done in the, for the feature phones in the 90s or for other systems like machine-to-machine communication or desktop systems or whatsoever into something that is really 21st century ready. Because everything in the past was all feature phones, all things, oh, we want this feature, we want that feature, and this needs to be implemented, this one. And we said, okay, nah, we want something way more simple and way more powerful. And we wanted actually then to say, okay, how can we actually put this into everybody? Meaning it runs, the same runs on the desktop, the same runs on the phone, the same runs in your car, the same runs on your tablet, and so on and so forth. So that's where we were actually going with this one. I said, okay, this is what we have to do. We have to make it way simpler. And we have a couple of key points on how we try to actually do this. So the first one was, we looked at the current APIs that were available, and the answer was, they were all way too complicated. We needed really simple APIs to make this work so that developers, UI developers, integrators can actually work on APIs that are simple and don't have to read like 6,000 pages of specification to figure out what they have to do. So the first thing we sat down is, okay, the APIs need to be really, really simple. They need to be language agnostic. So we went for Dbus APIs in a way that describes actually human interaction use cases with your device that you have at hand. So now, let me give you an example. So if you want to send a text message, what do you want to do? You want to give the number you want to send it to, and you want the message in UTF-8 format. All the stuff, converting the character set, reducing the character set, putting this into two text messages over the air and everything else, you don't want to deal with this one as a UI developer. You just send, here's the message. If it's 160 characters, if it's 200 characters, if it's 6,000 characters, you want to send this message to this number and then be done. And if it is delivered, you want to get a notification it's delivered. If the other person has read it, you want to have a sign of notification or whatever. But this all needs to be handled in a nice way without having to deal with any of the low-level technical details on the network. And keep in mind, some of these networks have been around since 1996. So, or even some of them are even older. So the technology is really bad, and you don't want to deal with any of this. So we said, okay, it needs to be simpler. Another thing is you want to make calls. Essentially, if you want to make a call, you want to make a call to a person. You say, call this person, please, and then you get an object back that describes your call. Previous APRs was, okay, these states, this number means this one, and this number changed to this one, then you basically got put on hold and everything else. So we said, we want this all in clear text. If you get it put on hold, we told you you're going to put on hold, not here's error code 675, and then you go from that one. So everything driven by use cases. So we looked down, what are the use cases that you actually really need in a modern smartphone, and then we said, okay, let's take these one. What's the use cases you need in a modern car? What do you expect how this to act? And based on these one, we designed the APIs. The other thing we wanted to do is, okay, hardware integration needs to be simple. You can't spend 12 months on actually integrating this into your hardware while everybody else is also on the market with the other device. So we want to make sure if you want to integrate the new hardware, it needs to be something like weeks and not months. So that needed to be figured out to have be done really way simpler. And we want to do this also in an open fashion, so we want to actually make sure that manufacturers start opening up their hardware to actually allow to do this. Based on standard, I think this is obviously, so all the standards that were there, we actually looked at them and actually implement them. And the most important for us was the KISS principle, really keep it simple and stupid. The simpler it is, the easier it is, will be actually in the end to use. The other thing we needed to do in addition was we wanted to integrate with existing projects. Bluesy is around since 11 years and is the Bluetooth stack for Linux, used on every Linux desktop, used on Android, used in car systems, and so on and so forth. A couple of years earlier, we had actually released Conman, the network manager replacement for us, as a tight integrated system, and we wanted to have Ophono integrated with both. So it should smoothly work with Conman for internet connectivity. It should work smoothly with Bluesy for hands-free profile, dial-up networking, and SIM access profile. In addition, what came in the last 6 months is that we also have an NFC project that will integrate with all three other projects, which is called NERD. So fully integrated solution, essentially, if you take all the projects together, you don't have to do anything else for your hardware integration. It will all just work. So when you build a device or build a car or build a TV or build anything you want with it, the one thing you can focus on is actually the user experience and nothing else, so you don't have to worry about anything else. So modem support, I mentioned this before. We want hardware support. And what everybody else has done before was essentially, oh, we have this great telephony stack, but the modem integration, nah, you have to do this. The manufacturer has to do this, the OEM has to do this, the integrator has to do this. So it got off pushed to someone else, which seemed to be like the standard procedure. We don't really want to deal with it. Let someone else deal with this. And we sat down, okay, we don't really think this is the future. It needs to be all there. So we actually started to get the modem support integrated step by step. And as of now, we have 16 different modem manufacturers supported with Ofono out of the box. So if you take Ofono, put it on a device with supported hardware, it will just work out of the box. And we have the big ones like Intel Infineon completely supported. It's a voice handset modem. It's completely supported from A to Z. Every feature is enabled. We have ST Ericsson. I mentioned ST Ericsson before. They have submitted their modem support to Ofono under an open source license, so we could integrate this. Nokia did the same. We have some other companies coming up and sending patches for their modem integration, and so on and so forth. And the list is pretty long, and there's not many other modem manufacturers left that we don't support. And I give you an example on what we needed for the Infineon modem. It took us 48 hours to integrate this into Ofono. 48 hours compared to 12 months. That's like a real difference. You take it, you integrate it, you're done. ST Ericsson said to us, it was the smoothest integration of any telephony stack they ever had in their life. So they said, okay, Ofono was the best thing to integrate because we could really easily integrate this. So that's something like really good things that we wanted to do, and it gets easier by time. But besides the modem support, we need to get all the telephony features because everybody was asking for telephony features. So as you might have guessed, 3GPP and 3GPP2 compliant, so we have all the features that we wanted to implement are there. So basically GSM, UMTS, CDMA, LTE, it's all there. And all the fancy stuff like USSD handling, supplemental services, SIM file system, SIM toolkit, radio access technology, text messaging, and so on and so forth. The list is long, and over the last 3 years, we have made sure that we have all these features implemented, integrated, have proper APIs for this, and have tested them. In addition to that, Ofono became a Genevieve. Genevieve is the automotive alliance that tries to define a standard OS for the automotive industry. Ofono became a Genevieve AppStack component, which means Genevieve was so impressed by the Ofono API that they took this as an AppStack component, meaning as a mandatory API in their compliance folder that you have to support if you want to be Genevieve compliant. On the right side, we have the additional layers for 2707 and 27010 that allows us easy integration. That's the way how we achieved the 48 hours for the Infineon modem integration. We already have IPv6 dual stack support. We have generic layers for HDLC or PPP. Ofono comes with their own PPP stack. So in these 3 years, we also wrote a PPP stack. So we can have a client or server PPP stack depending on what extra features you want to offer. Like you want to have a dial-up support or something like this, and you need PPP for this one, it's already there. You just have to use it. With that, we also put an AT emulator in there. So if you have a modem that actually doesn't talk AT commands, you can just emulate the AT commands for certification testing, for dial-up networking, for whatever you want easily with this one. It's all there. In addition, we took actually the hands-free support from BlueZee and put this into Ofono, since hands-free profile for Bluetooth is essentially a GSM call handling, and Ofono was already doing GSM call handling, so we put this in there and had a really smooth integration and cut down all the latencies that we had by having these daemons talk to each other, which were timing critical. We just cut them all down and it worked smoothly over. Same for dial-up networking. We just put this directly into Ofono since already Ofono was doing all the AT command handling and the PPP handling, so it was all there. It was easy to integrate. SIM access profile gets a little bit less tension these days, but would be also supported. In addition, with what we've done inside of Ofono, we also done a lot of work outside of Ofono, which is on the Linux kernel side. So with Ofono, actually a couple of subsystems came into the Linux kernel. One is the Fonet from Nokia, which is for their modem integration. The CAVE subsystem from ST Ericsson, which we helped ST Ericsson actually get this integrated in the kernel, all available as open source and inside a standard kernel. Qualcomm QCDM and QMI support also upstream of the kernel for modifications, and also Infineon's raw IP support for the high-speed packets. We have also integrated this one as well, and it's available, which is a big step from the big manufacturers towards an open-source solution. Let me give you a few things about how this size-wise actually matches. So if we trust the older statistic, which uses the basic Kokomo model, Ofono code size is roughly around 137,000 lines of code. This is the core, the plugins, and everything else. The core itself, meaning all the logic for handling text messaging, GSM calls, supplement surveys, SIM toolkit, and so on and so forth, is 67,000 lines of code. That's essentially it. Everything else, the rest of the code is really additional modem support for all the different manufacturers. If you compare this with other telephony stacks that are public or in the open, we actually had that the telephony stack is essentially the same size for all of them. It just depends on how much they're going to do in the telephony stack. And in most cases, they had around 60,000, 70,000, 80,000 lines of code in the telephony stack, but they were doing way less because they pushed out some problems like SMS handling to the upper layers, and they needed another daemon to actually do the SMS handling. So Ofono, with its 67,000 lines of code, they actually do all the stuff in one daemon. The interesting comparison but comes when you actually have the hardware support. So what do you need if you have an Android phone and have to put a modem plugin for, let's say, an Infineon modem in there? The difference was around, okay, they needed around 40,000 lines of code. We needed 4,000 lines of code. That's like a 10 times difference on the size of what we actually needed to implement the same support for the same manufacturer. We also started looking, okay, if you want to write a dialer or an SMS application or whatever, what's the difference? Because we say we have all the logic inside the core, so we have less amount of stuff that we have to handle inside the UI code because we want to load branding and things like this. So it was also roughly around 10 times smaller when we actually did the UI comparison for the stuff we did. This is obviously not a comprehensive comparison, but it gives you roughly an idea that we succeeded in actually shrinking this down. According to Olo also, Ofono is one of the 2% projects with the most contributors across all the open source projects they actually measure, which are actually a lot. So to come in conclusion, we are essentially ready for phone and tablet use cases. We have them all tested. We're ready for building netbooks and ultrabooks cases, which is interesting since we have the same stack running for on a phone, would be running on a desktop, and would be running on an automotive system, which is interesting since nobody has done this before. They all start building different stacks for different verticals. And we just, with the phone, will be able to use the same one for the different vertical. It's a big advantage since you get the testing from the desktop people, from the netbook people, and then you get the testing from the phone and then the IVI, and you have a really wider test base. It's 100% open source, and the community around is actually already pretty large. And some people use it for really funny things. Some people start working on machine-to-machine communication with Ofono, essentially text message-based communication between devices that have no human interaction whatsoever. Other people use this in public transportation, as I mentioned before. So it's kind of interesting what's going on in these areas and what's coming there. And with that one, I actually am finished with my presentation and be almost ready to hand this over to Jesse. Unless you have any questions. So this is open for questions now. And I have cake. Don't be shy. No questions? Everyone wants to hear Jesse? Yeah. Then thank you very much.
I'll try not to keep you from the cake for too long here. My name is Jesse Barnes. I work in the Open Source Technology Center with Marcel. I lead the graphics kernel team and also work on Wayland with Christian, who's our tech lead. This is a pretty high-level overview of Wayland. And I expect questions. If you have any, just shout out or raise your hand, and I'll try and call on you and repeat the question. So if you have questions about specifics or things that I'm not covering, feel free to jump in. But on a high level, Wayland is both a display management architecture and a protocol. So there's a little bit of confusion about this sometimes, the distinction between the Weston compositor and Wayland as an architecture. So it's actually kind of both. It it's a philosophy about how things ought to be composed and displayed on the screen, but it's also a specific protocol for doing that. And then there are implementations on the toolkit side, on the client side, in applications, and also in a server that responds to protocol requests and manages your display. The whole idea is that it rolls all the window management, composition, and display management into a single server, unlike the X server where you have a split out window manager, split out compositing manager, and then some clients doing direct rendering, some clients doing indirect rendering. In the Wayland architecture, all of that is in a single process, and all of the clients are expected to be direct rendered themselves, whether that's with the CPU or GPU, and they just pass buffer handles to the server. So that may make you think, oh, so there's no rendering API. That's correct. There is no rendering API for Wayland. Wayland doesn't expose, you know, X draw line or X draw ellipse or give me a dash line or give me a gradient. Wayland does not expose any sort of drawing API at all. It lets the clients do whatever they want. So your clients could be rendering with OpenVG or OpenGL or Cairo or, you know, just some random CPU renderer you've got. Wayland doesn't impose anything on you there. And one of the big takeaways, and I've got some frequently asked questions that we'll go over later, but one of the big things that Wayland does is it really consolidates a lot of the experience we've developed extending and improving the X server over the past, you know, many years. At the last time I gave this talk, actually, Keith was in the audience, and he had just given another Wayland talk. And so you'll see with the FAQ why that's kind of funny. So today, so we've been working on Wayland for some time within Intel for different projects, and it's shipping in different products today. But we're continuing to improve it, and the ultimate goal is to make sure that it's sufficient for a wide variety of projects, whether that be automotive or handset or tablet or TV or, you know, even a desktop environment. So we're definitely working towards that. And one of the immediate focuses we have today is on the automotive sector. We think it's a pretty interesting technology that can bring a lot of things that we've been wanting there for a long time. Qt was the first toolkit we ported, aside from the toy toolkit that Christian did for Weston and Wayland to begin with, just so he could have something to test with. So Christian and I started the Qt work a long time ago and rewrote it a couple times and learned a lot about how to do things, how not to do things. And since then, the Nokia team has taken that over. And they're making really good progress. So the Qt port is pretty mature. And in fact, Rusty, I don't know if he's in the room, had a really nice user experience built on top of Qt for Migo. That ran on this. That was a lot of fun. EGL and Cairo are also two technologies that have been supported since the beginning. EGL obviously doesn't impose a native windowing system on you. You have to interact with the native windowing system somehow. But beyond that, it provides kind of a nice abstraction for how to bind your buffers, draw to them, get them onto the screen with swap buffers and such. And then Cairo is a nice library for rendering anti-alias 2D graphics. And it's pretty well optimized for CPU rendering. And so that was also a good test of making sure that a CPU rendered buffer, we can attach that to Wayland in an efficient way. So both of those have been around also since the beginning. Qt5, Tiago, is Qt5 out now?
Not yet,
but it will be soon, and it has full support for Wayland. And in fact, I think the Qt guys have written like 3 or 4, maybe more, Wayland-based compositors for various projects they're doing. So they're really running with it. The GTK work is coming along really well. We had some kind of skunk work stuff going on to port Mutter over to Wayland and make it into a Wayland compositor, and that was able to run the full Moblin UX, which is really cool, and we demonstrated some pretty good gains there. And also the GNOME 3 desktop was able to run on that to a certain extent. So we're working with the upstream guys to see if they can pick that up now. I think that'd be a lot of fun. The EFL work, Samsung has had someone working on this for a while, and the EFL work is actually looking really good. We're actually putting some people on this too. So all of the basic apps run. I think even the WebKit runtime runs to some extent today. We've got some optimization to do, but it's looking really good. And EFL is just kind of a nice, it's got things split up pretty nicely, and so it's pretty easy to integrate things and optimize. We do have some integration to do with the Wayland main loop. So one of the things in the compositing architecture Wayland has, your client renders a buffer, passes it to the compositor. The compositor consumes that to create a final scene for the screen, displays it, and then it'll send an event back to your client notifying you that, by the way, your frame's been consumed. You may want to draw another one now. So we don't have that integrated with EFL, but that should improve the smoothness of the animations. On EFL on Wayland today uses a timer, so you may end up in a case where you end up missing a few times. The Wayland website is a good place to look for progress here. We've got per toolkit pages on what's working, what's not, and pointers to all the repos and everything. And so that's a good place to check for status. So this diagram kind of illustrates at a very high level what a Wayland native app might look like and how it interacts. So in your, say, a Qt app or a GL app, you'll link in your runtime libraries, and those in turn will link into the core Wayland protocol libraries, which are auto-generated from an XML file describing the Wayland protocol. And that saves you a lot of glue that you might otherwise have to write with X. The move to XML descriptions of the protocol was fairly recent, and it's saved a lot of time and a lot of errors. So those libraries will then pass, and these protocol libraries communicate directly with the Weston compositor or whatever compositor you have. It could be a Qt-based compositor or something else. It's not Weston, but Weston is the implementation that all of the upstream developers work on. It'll pass buffer handles that it's direct rendered into its own memory down to the compositor, and then the compositor can pull those together and put together a final scene. So you might gather from here that one of the core things that we need for Wayland is a way to pass buffers around. And that really is the fundamental requirement. So if you have some, you know, SoC device with a graphics core on it, if there's some way of sharing buffers between processes, chances are you can run Wayland just fine. You may have to do some glue layer there, but you can do that. And the nice thing about especially the modern toolkits, Qt and GTK, they're fairly high level. So apps written in those toolkits and EFL as well tend not to have a whole bunch of, you know, X-specific calls or low-level calls into Windows or Mac APIs. They tend to use the toolkit abstractions quite a bit. So for the most part, Qt and GTK apps, if you're running against a recent version of those libraries, a lot of times you don't even need to recompile. You can just load a different backend for the toolkit and things work. When we were doing the Qt port way back when, using the Mego UX, you know, we were able to compile the whole Mego UX stack using the Wayland backend for Qt with, like, I don't know, a dozen lines changed through this whole set of libraries. So it's pretty minimal. As long as your apps and client libraries are using toolkits well, you know, the port to Wayland is not difficult. If you're doing straight GL, obviously you'll need to do some porting of whatever your native Windows system you've got, but usually that's abstracted away in some way. One thing that Wayland provides is X compatibility. So there's a Wayland X server, just like you would have under Windows or Mac. You'd have run the X server if you wanted to run X apps and display Emacs on your local machine or whatever. So Wayland has that as well. There are some patches for the upstream X.org X server to integrate with Wayland nicely, and in fact provide optimized rendering in the Wayland case. So, and there are a couple different modes you can run it in. You can run it as a full screen X app, or you can run it as a rootless environment. We're still working out some of the details on how we want window management to work in that case. Typically, on other platforms, you build in a window manager to your X server if you're running in a rootless configuration, and it never quite meshes right. So that's something Kristen's always agonizing about, trying to get little corner cases working better than the other environments. But the fundamental architecture on the X side is pretty much the same. So you still have clients, you know, sending their commands to the X server. You still got an out-of-process compositor, window manager potentially, depending on how you've run it. They're rendering frames, and then the X server in turn is passing those buffer handles down to Wayland. So it, you know, the X server looks a lot like a regular Wayland client. So here are some of those frequently asked questions. These are some of the fun ones that I see, like on the Pharonix forums or something like that, when I'm browsing around, or that come up on the mailing list somewhat regularly. And one of the fun ones is like, oh, these people that are doing Wayland, they don't understand X, they don't understand its history. Why would they reinvent this? You know, they should just extend X. So, as I was saying in my last talk, Keith was sitting there and he got a good chuckle out of this since he's working on Wayland too. And Christian is responsible for, like, pretty much single-handedly for a lot of the progress that we've made in the X world in the past 10 years. So to say that the people who are doing Wayland don't understand X is an incorrect one. But fundamentally, there are a lot of reasons why we felt like Wayland was a better solution. The multi-process model we felt didn't scale well for extensions. It was difficult to do direct rendering and compositing in X. Even today, if you're running an application and have a compositing manager off to the side, the way that the rendering is done means that the applications have no direct communication with the compositing manager. And so you can end up burning a lot of extra GPU or CPU time because your apps have no way of knowing whether the compositors picked up their frames or not. So, you know, there are lots of issues like that. Beyond that, just doing extensions in X is a huge pain because you have to make sure you extend the core X protocol, extend window manager interaction, potentially add some compositor protocol directly to the applications. And so you're touching just gobs and gobs of code, and you've got kind of a combinatorial explosion of configurations you need to support, bugs you've potentially added. Next one is pretty common too. And I think this probably came up at the Geneva conference recently too. So what are the requirements for Wayland? You know, will my SoC graphics work on Wayland? And the answer is almost surely yes, because what you need for a standard GL stack these days is the same thing that you need for Wayland. It's just a matter of how you've abstracted your buffer management and display management APIs. And for the most part, you know, vendors seem to be settling on the DRM KMS API. But there are some alternatives, but fundamentally they provide the same sorts of functionality. You know, you need to be able to allocate graphics memory to do rendering to. You need to be able to control your displays. Those are all pretty common. So if you have those, then you can support Wayland. And Wayland, or Weston, the Weston compositor we have out at freedesktop.org, has multiple backends, in fact. So you can run the Weston compositor on top of your Linux kernel standalone. You can run it on top of X Windows. You can run it on top of OpenWF, even. Or you can run it inside of another Weston compositor. So you can nest them, which is kind of fun. Another one that comes up a lot, and a little less today, although we were having a discussion about some of the more esoteric requirements here, input. So the Wayland protocol has support for input. And Daniel Stone has been working on extending that a little bit to support some different kinds of input devices and provide clients with more information about input devices. But today it supports, you know, your standard input devices, including multi-touch stuff, touch screens, mice, keyboards. Things like Wacom tablets are the things that we don't support yet today, but that's not far off. And I think even in the X world, a lot of that's kind of handled on the client side anyway for special applications like GIMP. And this last one is a lot of fun, the network transparency. Like, oh, I use X network transparency all the time. You guys are killing it. What are you doing to my network transparency? So there's no server-side rendering, like I said. And that actually makes the problem a lot simpler. So we can take something like RDP, bolt that onto a Weston or Wayland server, and do really efficient network transparency. In fact, I think a lot better than what X does in terms of latency today. So one of the reasons I wasn't running Wayland on this laptop is because I had been hacking on adding RDP to Weston. So it's still broken on my laptop. This was actually a schedule we came up with a little while ago. 85 is out there. We did that at FOSDEM. I actually have to check and see if Christian's been tagging the 9.9 releases. The protocol is actually in pretty good shape as far as the core goes. As I was saying, Daniel Stone's working on some extensions to the input side, but other than that, the protocol is actually in pretty good shape. And so we've been reluctant to tag a .9 release right before we bump the protocol again. But at this point, you know, you can grab master, run EFL stuff on it, run Qt stuff on it. And when we do the 1.0 release, you'll actually not be far off from having your stuff work there. 1.0, I think we pulled that into the end of this year sometime. Or actually, no, maybe this summer. We'll see. We've been talking about, you know, feeling comfortable about where the protocol is, and we'll pull it in as much as we can because we really want people to get on board. And, of course, the protocol is not unlike X in that it's very easy to extend. So, you know, if we have some big new chunk of functionality, one of the things that we want to add is some more advanced output configuration support, so you can have lots of different types of displays attached to your system and configure those and get advanced information to and from them. So that may be an add-on protocol post 1.0, so we'll see. So any questions before I let you guys get to cake? No questions? Yeah, I can repeat it. So the question was, do we expect Wayland to replace X anytime soon? So that depends. In some environments, like I was saying, in the automotive environment, we expect Wayland to be shipping relatively soon. In other environments, like TVs, people are already shipping product based on Wayland. For the typical Linux desktop, which I think is probably what you're getting at, it's going to depend on the distributions. So I think Ubuntu has committed to using Wayland. I don't know exactly what they mean by that, but I expect they're probably waiting for 1.0 before they really try and move their Unity environment over to it. But at this point, you know, Clutter and GTK and all of that stuff work on Wayland. So once we do 1.0, they'll probably start looking at moving. The other environments, I don't know what their plans are. If we can get the GNOME 3 guys interested, I expect Fedora would move over pretty soon, and that may happen soon because the environment looks really nice. The GNOME 3 and Mutter and Clutter stuff look really nice on Wayland, and they're very efficient. I think it'd be a big win. Any other questions? So the question is, what advantages would Wayland bring to a thin client scenario where in an X model you might have I guess you're talking about a thin X client and then some GTK app running on a server displaying locally? So yeah, I do expect us to get to that, although probably not till after 1.0. Like I was saying, we do have plans for integrating RDP and VNC, and some of the new RDP includes per app, you know, remoting. So I would expect us to include that, and I would expect it also to be pretty efficient. But I don't know enough about the latest Windows stuff to say how it would compare. But I can say that it'll probably be better than the X experience, especially across a higher latency link. Oh, I see. Okay, so the question is, you know, is there anything in Wayland that will allow an a Qt or GTK app, for example, to render more efficiently in a thin client scenario? Yeah, I don't know offhand. I'd have to. I don't think there's anything that we would be doing better there, but.
Probably wrap it up.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. You can get me offline, but come and enjoy the cake. Thanks.